At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We have to tell you about something that every Star Wars fan needs to have. It's from Enso Rings. It's an industry leader in high-quality 100% silicone rings. They have teamed up with Star Wars to make these amazing rings that are instant collector's items.
It's so cool. It has 6 rings. Each one represents the design of a character.
What does your wife think about you having an Enso ring as your new wedding ring?
She said, as long as it's the Mandalorian, we're cool.
Perfect. So it's a perfect gift for the Star Wars fan in your life or for yourself. And if you're still looking for a killer Father's Day gift, order Enso rings. Tell him it's on the way and he'll be thrilled. Go to EnsoRings.com today. That's ENSORings.com.
And you can even get free shipping with the code Star Wars. That's EnsoRings.com. Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake. Hey there, I'm Reza Aslan.
And I'm Rain Wilson, and today we are going to talk about bombs.
No, we're not talking about bombs.
So bombs were apparently invented by Robert Oppenheimer in 1945.
Rain, that's fascinating, but that's not the actual topic.
What's really interesting is that, Reza, please, that atomic bombs have only been used twice in a war.
I'm just going to pretend that my co-host Rain is having an aneurysm because he apparently can't remember the topic of today's conversation.
So bombs get their energy from fission reactions.
Do you understand? You're ruining the podcast, okay? You are ruining the podcast, Rain.
What?
Okay, just like you ruin everything, frankly.
You're accusing me of ruining everything?
I'm just saying, I mean, maybe you don't ruin everything.
But I ruin everything?
You ruin a lot of things.
That's a way better topic than bombs. Why do we ruin everything?
Why
do we fuck up every last bloomin' thing, human beings?
Honestly, this is a question that I ask myself all the time. Reza, why do you have to fuck everything up? It's a condition that I would say like most of humanity, I would say all of society, has this condition, like this need to just ruin everything, every good idea we have.
Well, it's been happening since the dawn of time, but especially it goes hand in hand with technology, don't you think?
Yeah.
All of these innovations, wonderful innovations. You got electricity, right? We're so happy for electricity. It gives light and heat and warmth to billions. And yet we can also use it in an electric chair. Right?
I'm thinking about that first, you know, that first ape that grabbed that rock and was like, hey, I can open a coconut with this rock. I can also open a skull with this rock. Like, this is just who we are. We ruin things.
So why do we ruin things, Reza?
Well, look, I mean, I think part of it has to do with the fact that we don't tend to think about the implications or the full consequences of our actions or our creations, you know, our innovations. We're so excited about the next new thing, right? And how it's going to change the world. It's going to change everything. And then we never really stop to say, wait, what, for better or for worse? Because it's usually for worse. I think that's part of it. We just don't think far enough.
Well, frequently used example, but I'm going to go there, is this little pocket computer
that I have called an iPhone. If you had said to young Rainn Wilson 20 years ago, hey, you can have a little computer in your pocket, and in it, you will have all your photographs you've ever taken. In it, you will have unlimited supply of songs, any song you ever want to hear. You want to hear Ziggy Stardust. In 3.5 seconds, you can pull that up. You can Google anything, any piece of information you want to know. There's an endless supply of games. People can be in touch with you. There's maps. You will never get lost again.
You'll never be alone again.
I'll never be alone again. I would say, bring it on. Oh my God, this is the answer to all of my problems right here in my pocket. And yet, who would have foreseen how addicted I am to this phone and that I have 7 hours of screen time a day, Reza? Check your screen time.
Seven hours a day. I'm telling you, it's so true. Like, I remember the smartphone, I was thinking to myself, wow, like, so you'll never be bored again because you always have everything at your disposal. And now, besides the fact that it's hard to actually maintain, you know, my actual human relationships because my phone is with me at all times, I'm bored now. Like, I'm literally like, really? Only 1 million songs? Is that it? I don't know. There's nothing else on here.
But also, what's wrong with boredom? Boredom was not something that we needed to fix.
There used to be times when I would like be alone with my thoughts.
Wow.
I honestly can't remember. I really can't remember the last time I was alone with my thoughts because my fucking phone is with me.
I thought that today. Meditation is an important part of my life. I went to meditate and I had my phone as a timer and I had my phone with me. I'm like, why do I have my flipping phone with me when I'm meditating? I want to meditate. I want to commune with the spirit of the universe. I don't need my phone to tell me that it's my move now in a chess game with my friend Wade.
I mean, we could come up with 1,000 examples of like things that were created or ideas that were advanced or innovations that were developed that, you know, were to make things better, right? It was to make the world better. And it ended up making everything worse. I mean, yes, the phone, that's a good one. Internet, absolutely. Social media. I mean, I guess you and I are old enough to remember a time not that long ago where there wasn't Twitter, right? Where Facebook didn't exist. And then it showed up and we were like, wow, this is amazing. I mean, I remember when Twitter showed up and I was like, so you're telling me that I can tell everyone in the world what I am thinking at any time? And then you know what happened? I started telling everyone in the world what I was thinking at any time. Well, look, this is a fascinating topic. It's something that obviously you and I have a lot of personal, involvement in. Why do we ruin everything? And I think we might have the right person to help us answer this question.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a writer. Apparently, he's published a few books on the show today on Metaphysical Milkshake. Malcolm Gladwell. Sounds like a made-up name to me. Anyways, big fan of all of those books you wrote, Freakonomics, Sapiens. You're the best.
No, dude. Rainn.
Welcome to
wrong,
the what?
No, it's the wrong guy. Malcolm Gladwell, he wrote Tipping Point, Blink, David and Goliath, Eat, Pray, Love, all of them huge, huge international bestsellers.
I loved Eat, Pray, Love.
It made me cry.
It's so beautiful.
You know, for the longest time, people legit thought I did write Freakonomics. Back when Freakonomics was that massive international bestseller, at least half of the people who would come up and talk to me, you know, hey, you're Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah, I love Freakonomics. And they would go on and on for like, you know how they go on. People in that situation go on for like 10 minutes and you don't have a chance to interrupt and say, no, I'm sorry. And then you realize you can't interrupt and say,
that's not me.
No. And finally, my strategy was just, I would just say, yeah, it's, you know, thank you so much. Really, it was a great book. I enjoyed writing it. I'm now working on, you know, Freakonomics too.
Weird, like Rainn gets that with Tom Cruise all the time. People are always like, love the Mission Impossible movies.
But there's periods of time as an actor that I go through where I get legit recognized as someone else in another movie. For years, it was Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black, who, remember, he played that kind of lumbering alien walking down the street? And there is a certain resemblance there. And it was just all the time, loved you, love your work, great. It was so funny. The alien, Men in Black, and I did the same thing. It's kind of like, hey, thank you, thank you.
Obviously, we're just ribbing you. We know all about Malcolm Gladwell and all the stuff that you do, the Revisionist History podcast, the amazing books, and of course, your newest book, Bomber Mafia, which actually happens to be my favorite of your books. I really, really loved this thing. I was listening to it on SoundCloud, and you know, just kind of basically ignoring my children for the last 2 or 3 days, just getting so deep into.
And he has seven children. History. That's a hard
I have,
task.
I have seven currently. A lot of ignoring. Seven children. We'll see how it goes. Who makes the cut, in other words. But I love this book. It's actually, I have to say, of all of your books, it's the one that I found to be most like a history book, right? I mean, it was like a deep dive into a particular moment in time. In the Second World War, it looks at this huge technological innovation during that war that, you know, could have massively reduced the number of war casualties, but didn't, because we managed to fuck it up. So we're going to talk a little bit more about all the themes and issues that arise from the book. But maybe just for our listeners, tell us who exactly were the Bomber Mafia.
So there's a group of pilots in the 1930s, who were all at a place called Maxwell Field, which is now Maxwell Air Force Base, just outside of Montgomery, Alabama. And they're, you know, this is the dawn of the age of air power. So planes have only been around for, you know, 20 years. It's brand new technology. No one's really figured out what they mean if you want to fight a war. They're just a kind of plaything. And there's this group of these guys are all young. They're in their 20s and early 30s, and they're way off the reservation. No one else involved in the U.S. Army or the Navy or any other part of the Marines thinks these people are sane. They think they're all nuts. And, you know, they're not in Washington, D.C., and they're not in California. They're outside of Montgomery, Alabama, right, in the sleepiest. And they're just, they kind of get together and drink a lot of bourbon. And they have this dream. They decide, we don't think the airplane is this novelty. We think the airplane is going to change warfare forever, and we're going to be the ones to do it. And so they call themselves the Bomber Mafia because they have this dream. And in 1936, they had a little school at Maxwell Air Force Base, 36, 37, 38, 39, years before the war. And not a lot of people went through that school, but the people who graduated from the school run by the Bomber Mafia were the ones who, you could argue, they were the ones who won the war for the Allies. I mean, everyone who was anyone in the Air Force during the Second World War spent time drinking the Kool-Aid in Central Alabama. I mean, it's just a crazy, forgotten story from the Second World War.
So one of the things I loved about Bomber Mafia was the incredible cast of characters that you painted there at the training facility throughout the army, this burgeoning air force, this kind of nascent air force, which was so brand new. And two of the greatest characters were Haywood Hansel and Curtis LeMay. And the thing I was interested about was that Hansel was the one who was really part of the Bomber Mafia, and
he was like the godfather of the Bomber Mafia, right? He was like,
yeah, and searching for this goal of precision bombing, that if we can bomb the exact right target in the exact right way and the exact right day, we can cause incredible reverberations throughout the enemy's army and production and industry, and bring it to a screeching halt. And this way, we save lives and reduce the time of the war. It's like win, win, win all around. So this a handful of people come up with this idea. Later, you get into, sorry, spoiler alert, but because we're diving into the ideas underneath what you've written. Curtis LeMay is, you know, trained in the same place, but has a very different philosophy. Maybe you can explain a little bit about Curtis LeMay and also the differences between the two, because then I have a question for you about it.
Yeah. So imagine, here's the best way to think about it. Imagine that you're Canada and you would like to defeat the United States in a war. And you're the head of the Canadian Air Force. And you decide the surest way to get America to give up and sue for peace is to cripple New York City. And actually, the Bomber Mafia, one of the exercises they did was this exact thing. How would we bring New York City to its knees? One approach would be...
remove all bagels from it?
Remove all bagels, yes.
Riots in the street, anyway.
One approach is you send, you know, a couple hundred bombers and just level Manhattan. Right? That's one approach. Mm-hmm. That's what the Germans were trying to do to the English when during the Blitz, right? Let's just level London mm-hmm. and see if they give up. The other approach would be the Bomber Mafia said, well, actually, what if all we did was take out the aqueducts that bring water to New York City? So the aqueduct, there's an aqueduct. You can see it from the air. Mm. It's still there, by the way. It's whatever. Back then, it would be 6 feet wide, you know, 6 feet off the ground. It runs 30 miles, 40, 50 miles from the Catskills into New York City. It brings 100% of the water to New York. If you take out the aqueduct and there's no drinking water in New York, how long will New York last? I mean, it won't. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's it, right? You couldn't go on. So they would say, why would you, don't bother leveling an entire city and killing millions of people. Just take out the aqueduct. The same result will happen, but you'll save, you'll spare a million lives. So that's the, now, if you want to do the second route, take out the aqueduct, you have to be able to hit the aqueduct.
Right, and that was incredibly complex. Like it's-
That was incredibly
complex. Just almost an impossible feat, like you said.
Yeah, so that's what the these cast of characters down in Alabama, led by this guy, Haywood Hansel, they believed you could take out the aqueduct. They were like, you know what? Everyone else thinks you can't aim a bomb. We think you can aim a bomb so well that all you have to do is take out the aqueduct and then take out like a power station, take out a couple of electrical substations. You could maybe kill 20 people and use maybe 10 bombers and you're done. Call it a day. New York's finished. That's the dream.
But it was an impossible dream, wasn't it?
I went and I had dinner with the chief of staff of the Air Force, guy named David Goldfein. And afterwards, we went outside and he gathered a bunch of his top people. And we had drinks and we sort of chatted for 2 hours, one summer night last summer. And there was a moment in the conversation when he said, you know, we were on the Fort Myer base in just outside of DC. And there's a street with a row of gorgeous homes where all the top military brass live. The head of the Joint Chiefs, the vice chair of the Joint Chiefs, the head of the Air Force. Long row of houses overlooking Washington, DC. It's just incredible. And he was saying, you know, and he walked me through all the iterations of aerial warfare. He's like, in the Second World War, you would have sent this many bombers and they would have leveled the entire base with this many. And then he was like, you know, my father flew in Vietnam and he would have brought in, and it would have been, you know, three bombers and they would have done, and then like in the Gulf War, we would have brought in, and like, and today we would have a single stealth bomber. You wouldn't hear it coming and it would take out, you know, the room in which we're sitting and nothing else, right? He's like, talk about the evolution. And he was like, so 50 years ago or 70 years ago, in order to kill us all around this little, you know, where we were chatting, you would have had to kill, you know, another 10 or 20,000 people because you would have bombed the entire base. Today, we could just take out you and me. So two. But he said, the difference is now the temptation to go to war is so much greater. So 75 years ago, when you thought about going to war, you're like, oh my God, to do even the smallest thing in this war, I'm going to have to kill tens of thousands of people. He's like, today, you can sit in the Oval Office and you can say, I want to take out Malcolm. And you can take out Malcolm and no one else. So what's stopping you from taking out Malcolm? Nothing, right? There's no collateral damage. You're not going to kill women and children. You're not going to like take out, not even going to take out my cat. You could find Malcolm walking down the street and just take out Malcolm. So what's stopping you from doing that every single day with some other person you don't like?
Yeah.
Nothing. That's the new temptation. Yeah. And so to your point, that's exactly the question these guys wrestle with. Is the new regime where we can hit whatever we want with absolute precision, is that more moral than the old regime? And they don't know the answer to that question. And I don't know the answer to that question.
Folks, CBD isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel. I'm talking about stress. I'm talking about anxiety, pain. You know, if you're someone like me, I'm a writer. My neck and shoulders are always in agony. A little bit of CBD takes that pain right away, my friends.
Feels is a better way to feel better. It's a premium CBD that will help you keep your head clear and feel your best. It's hassle-free, delivered directly to your door. As you know, I'm a professional MMA fighter, and CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. That was a joke.
All you got to do is put a few drops of Feels under your tongue, and you'll feel the difference within minutes.
And joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time.
Start feeling better with Feels. There's no reason not to. Become a member today by going to feels.com/milkshake. And you'll get 50% off your first order and free shipping. That's feals.com/milkshake.
Go there to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. feals.com/milkshake.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to rub this CBD all over my naked body. Support for today's episode comes from Manscaped. Rain, you're a hairy guy. I'm a hairy guy.
Yeah.
We are two hairy men.
We need some pruning, Reza. We need some pruning.
Manscaped is the right tool for that. It'll get the job done quickly, safely, and hygienically. You know, Father's Day is around the corner.
And you are a father of like 17 children.
My children never get me anything for Father's Day. This would be a good Father's Day gift, kids. Actually, I don't let them listen to the pod, but
okay, so here's what you want to do. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code MILKSHAKE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off manscaped.com. Use the code MILKSHAKE. It's dad bod season, Reza. Time to get smooth.
The brand new Lawnmower 4.0 and Ultra Smooth Package is the perfect gift for you and the dad in your life. To complete your grooming game, get 20% off plus free shipping with the code MILKSHAKE at manscaped.com. Well, and this brings up, of course, the topic of this pod and why we wanted you on, which is, why must we ruin everything, right? Why can't we have nice things? Why, as a species, do humans have to just fuck everything up? We have all these great ideas, these moral imperatives, whether it's target bombing or whether it's the internet and social media or whether it's just factories and the Industrial Revolution, whatever it is, we act in goodness and in an attempt to make life better for humans. And what always seems to happen is that we end up making things worse. The factories destroy the environment. The internet, which is supposed to give freedom to people and let people's voices be heard, very quickly becomes just another way for tyrants and autocrats to stifle any kind of freedom of speech. Social media, which is just a cesspool, you know, was supposed to change the way that we communicate with each other and expand all of our circles, give us access to new sources of knowledge and information. And instead, all it's done is made our world smaller and more siloed. What is the thing about the human condition? And this is a huge part of the Bobber Mafia. What is the thing about the human condition that just has to fuck up every good intention that we have, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to these technological advances?
Yeah, we can't. Yeah, it is. Isn't it interesting? Like, we can't help ourselves.
Can't have nice things.
The part of this interests me is, I think in part it's because we're always solving the part of the problem that's not a problem.
Expand on that. Tell me more.
Well, so for example, Google. Googling something gives you unlimited access to all the information you could possibly want. Before we had Google, was that a problem? Well, no, wasn't a problem. In 1995, was my life ruined because I couldn't look up the capital of Thailand in 2 seconds? No, I could find out the capital of Thailand. It just would take me a little bit longer. But it wasn't, I wouldn't have identified, if you'd said to me in 1995, Malcolm, your life is forever scarred because you can't find out Bangkok in 2 seconds. I would have said, actually, no, it's not. That's not the, I have problems in my life. That's not one of them. So Google looks at all the problems that Malcolm has and decides the one we're going to solve is we're going to let you look up Bangkok in 2 seconds. Like, that's a sort of dumb version, but here's another dumb one. But it's amazing how many, I'm a big runner. Right now, the running world is in tumult because Nike and all the shoe companies have come up with shoes that makes everyone run faster, way faster. So every record is being broken right now, which has the effect of erasing the past. So now, like, we don't even know who the fastest runners are anymore. Someone's going to break Usain Bolt's 100-meter record this summer, but not because they're better than Usain Bolt, but because their shoes are better. So now, that solves a problem of it helps us run faster. But that wasn't a problem. The problem with running was not that we're not running fast enough. The problem was we get injured, or the problem is not enough people run. How about a shoe that helps people who don't want to run, run? That strikes me as a legitimately good shoe. That's not the shoe we got. The shoe we got was it helped people who already run like maniacs to run a couple seconds faster. Why are you solving that problem? That's not the problem, right? But I feel like we do endless versions of this. Like, it's constant. Like, it's just like I want to convene all the smart people of the world and say, okay, guys, look, can we just decide on what the top 10 biggest problems are? And let's just focus on those for 5 minutes, as opposed to running off and like giving me some other like thing that, someone's right now in the world is trying to make a bicycle which is 1 ounce lighter. Why? The problem with bicycles is that when I ride my bicycle, I'm afraid a car's going to hit me and kill me. Solve that problem, please. Right? But it's just to your point, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
Because all the smart people are not solving the thing, the problems that are problems.
But isn't there something a little deeper, isn't there something a little underneath that a little bit, which is we're so into short-term gain that we don't think things through. And doesn't there need to be, for instance, let's just use precision bombing. What it led to is in this kind of war against terror that we're in right now, is it, I'm not trying to get all political, but essentially what it's led to is a kind of nonstop war. And then precision bombing is used as an assassination technique. So there's a constant kind of button being pushed. Oh, someone's getting assassinated. Oh, they got taken out. Oh, this general got taken out, this person.
I'd say one step further than that, it's turned war into a video game. So our fighters aren't even necessarily out in the battlefield anymore. They're in a cubicle.
You've seen the guys flying the drones. They look like guys playing an Xbox.
You know what? Along these very lines, when I was chatting with all those Air Force generals, they were talking about the stealth bomber. So the stealth bomber is in, I may have this incorrect, it's in Kansas, on an Air Force base in Kansas. And it's in Kansas because it's so valuable, costs so much, it's got to be in the center of the country so we can defend it. So when we were fighting the war in Bosnia or the guys would get in the plane, they live in this suburb of whatever city in the middle of Kansas. They would drive to the Air Force base, get in the plane, and the plane's so fast, they would fly to wherever it was, drop their bombs, fly home, and then pick up their kids from school. And
wow.
It's like the whole notion of, you know, this, you have to go to the field of battle and you're away from your family for months. No, these guys are literally, they're getting in the Ford Escape at 8 o'clock in the morning and driving to the Air Force Base, and they're in They're over Europe in like whatever it is, a couple, 2 hours.
Now they don't even do that, right? Now they just go to, you know, again, some like office building somewhere in Virginia.
And, yeah.
And fly the drone over
from there.
And pick up Papa John's pizza on the way home.
Yeah, it is so weird. I mean,
so here's the question I have, Malcolm, is has it always been like this? Do you feel like there was a time in you know, human society in which, you know, we actually stopped to think about the long-term morality behind these innovations? Or as Rain said, is it just that part of the human condition is that we don't have the ability for that kind of long-term thinking, that we're always trying to solve the problem immediately in front of us, and we don't stop to think what will be the consequences for solving this particular problem?
I mean, occasionally, we clearly get it right some portion of the time, right? That's why we have progressed as a species. And you and I can point to 10, 20, you know, the COVID vaccine solves a problem that's a problem. Like, we did a really good job on that. So we can get our act together and we can focus. I just think there's a lot of time spent on, everyone picks on him, but I'm going to pick on Jeff Bezos for a moment. Somebody asked him why he built this, you know, he wants to build a rocket that goes to wherever it is, Mars. And they were like, well, why are you spending billions of your dollars building a rocket to go to Mars? He goes like, that was just the most interesting problem I could think of trying to solve. And I was like, really, dude?
That's the problem?
How
about poverty?
That's really the most interesting?
Hunger? I don't know.
Can I borrow 15 minutes of your time to give you some other suggestions about where you want to put your billions?
Although, in Bezos' favor, I will say he's shifted his focus now, and he is putting tens of billions, 60, 80, $100 billion towards fighting climate change, which is cool. Although, sidebar, it is
causing
kind
the
of
climate change.
he's doing this carbon sequestration kind of technology. Like, how do we not cease polluting, but actually just take carbon from the atmosphere and put it back
in
the earth?
No, that's a better. I'll admit. I thought it was funny that the minute his wife, Mackenzie, sets out on her own, she immediately gives away a whole lot of money for some really, really good causes. Like, I feel like she was sort of sitting in the back, like thinking, she was thinking about it. Now, there's some better things we could do with our cash.
I mean, I have an idea, Jeff. Maybe don't send me one tube of toothpaste at a time. That seems like an easy...
Well, maybe, Reza, don't order one tube of toothpaste at a time, because that's what I do with Amazon. Like, oh, I got no toothpaste. Blip, blip, blip. Here's my mini computer in my pocket. Mm-hmm. Thank you, whoever invented that idea. Blunk. Oh, toothpaste. And then the next day it's at my house. But I want to talk about morality for a minute. It's a difficult topic, but it's just like, forget religion. Let's put religion aside. Let's put the Ten Commandments aside and God and hell and damnation and any of that nonsense aside and just talk about like just good old fashioned right and wrong. And isn't this a result? Why do we fuck things up? Because morality is not connected to technology. Because when science happened, science wanted to be unfettered from any kind of restraint. It just is like, we are just going to look at data and we're going to create experiments and we're going to solve problems and we're just going to build shit. And there was never that kind of ongoing discussion of like, okay, precision bombing. Let's get together. Let's have a colloquium. Let's have a Zoom meeting. Let's bring everyone to the table and talk about, okay, what are the consequences of precision bombing? What might precision bombing look like in 10, 20, 50, 100 years? And how now can we address that? Isn't morality at play in this discussion, Malcolm?
Well, the original bomber mafia certainly felt they were representing a moral position, a considered moral position. And I think in their context, they were right. So they weren't thinking about how the modern world would use some of the ideas they were proposing and technologies they were proposing to turn war into a kind of 24/7 phenomenon. They had a legitimate immediate concern, which was, they had just come out of the First World War, which was, you know, the First World War was one of the most extraordinary moral abominations of, you know, where a million people died in one battle in the First World War, in the Battle of the Somme. It's crazy. So they were saying, we don't need to do that again. We, you know, so I think what happens, it's not that morality and technology are disconnected. It's that I think they very often start connected. And what happens is that they just go on divergent paths. Like, I do think the people who started Twitter, you know, honestly felt that Twitter could be an agent for positive change, and it could be a way to fight tyranny. It could do all these, you know, remember all the excitement around Twitter and Arab Spring. People, that was an honest belief that Twitter was a force for good. Turns out, probably isn't. Doesn't have the impact we thought it would. But that's not the fault of, it's just that no one had any notion about how that technology would evolve. You know, we didn't realize that Twitter was just going to turn into high school. We thought it was something nobler and, you know, grander. And so I don't know. I think it's just kind of impossible for anyone who's at the in on the ground floor of a technology to understand the way it's going to evolve, the way it's going to interact with existing institutions.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Does it also have to do with the fact that innovation moves at such a fast pace, right? That it is sometimes difficult to slow down long enough to say, what are the consequences of this? Like, I mean, I remember the genius of Twitter was precisely that you could be anonymous. And so if you were, you know, a Green Movement member in Tehran, you could be on Twitter and anonymously post information without, you know, putting your life at risk. And that same very important innovation in 2009 now makes it, you know, the worst place on earth, where, you know, any asshole can say whatever he wants to say about, you know, anyone without ever having to deal with the consequences because of Twitter's anonymity. So in a sense, like, the issue here is that in each case, the source of our progress is also the source of our downfall. And we can't catch up to the technological innovations because they're moving at such a rapid pace. And so it's almost like this rock is rolling down the hill and there's almost nothing to be done about it. One technological innovation leads to the next one, leads to the next one, leads to the next one. And then next thing you know, war is a video game played by teenagers inside of, you know, cubicles. And so what I want you to do, because you've spent 30 years, right, delving into aspects of history and historical trends. And I'm curious, when you look at certainly the last, you know, 50 years or so of technological innovation, since the Second World War, most definitely. And when you look at the ways in which we have use technology or create a technology meant for good only to have it turned against us in one way or another. Do you feel like there's some kind of hope? Like, do you see that this perpetual cycle, you know, of being fucked by fucking up, to put it in, kindly, do you see that cycle heading in the right direction, or are things just going to get worse, especially now with, you know, the current pace of technological advancement?
Yeah. I mean, I'm congenitally optimistic, so I always like to believe that we figured things, these problems out. I do think, you know, this is a random example of this. I read this essay on the internet by a guy who doesn't have a lot of money and was talking about what does it mean to be just above the poverty line in America, right? I am not just above the poverty line in America. So a lot of what he was talking about is stuff I don't think about. And one of the examples he was talking about was, you know, if you're not on the just above the poverty line, you forget how big a deal cars are, if you are, that you're in fear that your car is going to break down. And if your car breaks down, you're screwed. Can't get to work. You could lose your job. Can't do really, really basic things. And you don't have any other options. And the cost of fixing your car is typically more than you can afford. And it's just talking through that kind of anxiety. And it made me think, you know, has anyone designed a car with that set of things in mind? So, you know, we design mass transit with that person in mind, but mass transit in most cities doesn't actually solve that person's problem, because you could spend 4 hours getting to your job on the other side of LA. You know, it doesn't help you if you got to wake up at, you're already stressed out. You got to work at 4 o'clock now to get to work at 8. But does someone say, I can build a car that not only is cheap to buy and cheap to run, but is I have ruthlessly removed every source of potential breaking down, you know, that's all I care about. Doesn't have to be fancy, doesn't have to be sort of, we've done that, but not really, right? Like, that's a really, really useful thing to kind of puzzle out. But do I think we'll have that in 5 years? I actually kind of think with some combination of like electric cars and autonomous thingy, and you know, if you add all these together, we could get to some kind of solution for that person. But it's amazing to me how long it's taken us to get there, right? Poor people have had trouble getting to work for as long as there have been poor people. And they have, you know, and it's gotten worse in contemporary times with, you know, inequality and traffic and all these kinds of things. And like, it distresses me how long it's taken, but I do have confidence we'll get there.
It's funny you bring that up, because as a kid, the first time I ever rode on a golf cart, I was like, why don't we just have golf carts? Why do we have all these different cars and trucks and bus? Like, everyone, just give everyone a golf cart. And the first time I was on the bumper cars, I was like, Why can't everyone just have a bumper car? This is perfect.
We can just bump into each other all the time.
We can bump, and it doesn't hurt anyone. Yeah, and you can bump, you can have fun.
Take care of all our accidents.
But isn't that where we're headed?
Yeah.
I know this is kind of a tangential, but we're kind of headed in the place where everyone is going to have the equivalent of a golf cart bumper car that maybe, yeah, okay, maybe its range is a little bit limited, 200 miles, and maybe it only goes up to 40 or 50 miles an hour, but that's it, but it doesn't break down. It charges at night. It doesn't have emissions. Anyway,
we'll figure out a way to screw it up.
To follow up on it, so that's actually a really good example. And I know this is a tangent, but it allows you to think about what has to happen for us to get there. So yes, could we have a world where every car is essentially very, very small and is a bumper car, where if it collides with another, they just kind of bounce off? Yes, you can get there. But the only way you have to get there is that rich people have to give up their big, heavy, expensive cars. Mm-hmm. We all have to agree. Well, if we all agree to ride around in little, tiny, light things, then all cars can be little, tiny, and light. But if one person says, no, I still want to drive my SUV, then it doesn't work anymore, right? Because then everyone else has to defend against the SUV. Right? So you get into these questions of solving social problems very, very quickly become questions about collective morality, that I have to convince the person with the Cadillac Escalade or the Range Rover, you can't have a Range Rover anymore, right? To solve the problem for the guy who's on the poverty line, you have to give up your ride. Are you willing to give up your ride, right? Now we have a Now we have a moral, social, complicated problem to solve.
I think, I'm pretty sure Malcolm just figured out the subject of his next New Yorker article. The bumper cars. Bumper cars for all. Yeah.
This was just a fascinating discussion. I got so much out of it. And the way that you take history and you intersect it with life's biggest questions and psychological and sociological quandaries is really inspiring. And you've done that again with Bomber Mafia. And it was just fabulous. It's got my mind is bubbling.
And speaking of big questions, Malcolm, you know, we like to end our podcast with what we call the lightning round. We just ask you a bunch of kind of big questions, and then you just answer with the first thing that comes to your mind. And then we snicker and make fun of you silently. You ready for that?
No, not silently. After he leaves.
What's the one skill you wish you had?
Wish I could swim.
You literally can't swim? Like you sink to the bottom like a stone?
Can't swim.
Wow, that's great. Because I was going to ask my lightning round question is, what is something no one knows about you?
Probably that I can't swim.
What emotion do you wish you could better control?
Oh my God, what an interesting question. Well, I'm such a repressed Englishman. I feel like they're all under control. I would ask the question differently. Which emotion do you wish you couldn't control?
Right.
Which one would you want to let go, let loose?
Well, you know, I wish I was more emotionally expressive, particularly in my affections for people. You know, I wish I told people who I love that I love them more, I suppose is how I would say that.
You can practice on me right now.
I love you, Rain.
What, name something that a lot of people like, but you can't stand.
Little Mermaid. Big opponent of the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, people don't know this about you, Malcolm, but you've really got it in for the Little Mermaid.
I have it in for the Little Mermaid.
When do you feel most connected to the universe?
When I'm running.
What's one eye-opening experience that everyone should have?
Well, I'll go back to running. Everyone should know what it feels like to run for more than an hour. So to be by yourself in nature, alone with your thoughts, in motion for more than 60 minutes.
All right. And then finally, what is your life's big question?
It's a question that I got from my mom, which is every morning, I feel like my mother would ask the question, where do I find joy in the coming day? That's my question.
That's a great daily question. Here's a funny thing that Malcolm will not remember this story, but before my first book had come out, that's when I first met you, Malcolm. I met you at a party somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I remember we're having a conversation, we were having drinks, and I said to you, you know, I've got a book coming out. Do you have any advice for me? And this is what you said. You said, yes. Remember, nobody gives a fuck about you or your book except you. Do you remember telling me that?
I said that? No.
It was eye-opening. It was the greatest advice I have ever heard. I have literally given that advice to dozens of more people. You may have a publicist. You may have an editor. You may have, you know, a marketing machine behind you. You may have, you know, an agent and all that stuff. They don't give a fuck about you or your book.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yes, that is true.
Literally my entire career was launched from that bit of advice. Just do it yourself because no one else cares. It's just you. Anyway.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell, we've loved all your books from The Power of Now to Songs My Father Taught Me to It Takes a Village.
My favorite was Beloved. Absolutely genius work.
Thank you for all of those wonderful stories. Thank you for your contribution to Western civilization. And thanks for this conversation. It was really fantastic.
Yeah. No, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Wow, that Malcolm Gladwell, huh?
How about
that? Kid's going places.
He's what a storyteller.
You know, really, really interesting conversation. And, you know, I was thinking about the whole bumper car idea, like individual bumper cars, and it's kind of genius if you think about it. Like, if we all just had, you know, these kind of small bumper cars that were like covered in rubber and just kind of bouncing off each other all the time. There'd be no more accidents and deaths, you know.
Everyone turns 16. They all get a bumper car that is never going to break down. Sealed, nice little radio in there, protect you from the elements. Maybe it just needs a little heater. Yeah, this could be the future.
This.
I think it's so really, I think it's great.
What could go wrong?
Nothing could go wrong. Nothing
like,
could go wrong.
How could
except
possibly
some asshole is going to outfit his bumper car with even bigger bumpers. And then what's going
to
happen?
Then I have to have bigger bumpers, obviously, like if he's having bigger bumpers.
So you can really slam someone going down the Ventura Freeway.
You know, I knew that you were going to figure out a way to screw it up.
Then we've got gladiator bumper cars, right? You saw Ben-Hur, yeah. The little spikes sticking out of the side.
Yeah.
Then ginormous
think about that
bumper
one.
Cars the size of SUVs.
I guess the other thing, too, is we'd have to put bumpers on all the, like, the highways, too, right? Because you got to bump off the wall.
Oh, that would be
you know,
so
maybe
much
this
fun,
this isn't going to work now that I think about it, actually. See, we ruined it.
Yeah, we'll just screw it up. In all seriousness, I was really touched by his optimism. And for someone who's written this many books and has dived into human psychology and sociology with as much expertise as he has over the decades, he's still optimistic for the future.
Yeah.
And the can-do human attitude that can overcome these issues. So I enjoyed hearing that about this conversation. It's just us that are the hopeless cynics, Reza.
It's mostly me. Let's just be honest.
It's you. Basically, it's you. But your wife is so nice. Is she available to do a podcast with me? Super fun conversation. Thank you again to Malcolm Gladwell. Everyone, check out his new book/audiobook/podcast extravaganza storytelling event, The Bomber Mafia. It truly is a fascinating tale.
And listen, maybe you want some more of Life's Big Questions. You can find us on our socials at Reza Aslan and at Rain Wilson. Also, of course, at Metaphysical Milkshake.
And on Twitter, we're at Meta Milk Podcast.
Let us know your life's questions, right? And who knows? We just might explore them on a future episode.
You can also subscribe to the Metaphysical Milkshake YouTube channel,
where you can watch full episodes every week.
And remember to follow, rate, and comment on Metaphysical Milkshake on Apple Podcasts and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Thank you so much for listening today. See you next week. In the meantime, try not to ruin everything.
Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick DeMaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. It is edited by Tyler Newbold and audio mixed by Justin Kyle. Original music by Jeff Tang.
Like my wife is, I love cooking and I love cooking for my wife. And she's always so grateful for, you know, the meals that I make for her. And it makes me feel good until I realize she likes everything. There's nothing she doesn't like, so.
Then just make her grilled cheese and call it a day.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.